This is the Highland Library Board meeting, January 25th, 2024.
Hi everyone, I'm pulling up my packet right now, so I apologize for a little bit. Is there a physical, does it have all the things that I'm supposed to say on it?
And did she get the papers she needed?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Welcome everyone. We have a new member, Ron Campbell, to represent the city council. He's not here today. He has a conflict. As we start our meeting today, we'd like to open to public comment. Is there anyone here that would like to make some public comment? All right, since there's no public comment, we're going to move on to the next step, which is open meeting trainings.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to your meeting tonight. This is a requirement that is we have to do annual open and public meeting trainings every year in every public body. So this will be a repeat of last year. Most of you have heard this multiple times, so I will just briefly review some of the important items, and then if you have any questions at the end, you can ask those of me. So, first of all, what is a meeting? A meeting is when you're convening as a quorum to discuss business of your public body. It includes workshops, electronic meetings. It does not include a chance gathering if you should happen, even if there should happen to be three of you or four of you at the grocery store. That does not count as a meeting. There are open meetings and there are closed meetings. You also have those in this body sometimes. So closed meetings can only be closed for certain reasons, as such as personnel, litigation, land use items, which you probably, well, you may have to discuss land use items at some point, but most likely it'll mostly be personnel items that you would deal with here, I would imagine. To go into a closed meeting, you have to already be in an open meeting, and then you have to have a majority vote, two-thirds vote, go into, on record, to go into that closed session, okay? And then no decisions can be made in that closed meeting. It's just a discussion meeting alone, okay? There are differences between public meetings. Yes. Question.
So can I ask a question about that? So, So often when it's about personnel things, you're seeking feedback, right? So when we say no decision, that there is information shared, right?
Correct.
Okay. Just want to make sure we're okay with that. Okay.
Yeah, you discuss, but you're not going to take any formal vote,
right,
on any item that what you discuss in here, and then you can go out into the public meeting and make any decisions you need there.
Didn't in last city council meeting, when it went to closed session, there wasn't enough votes to move it to closed session because, like, Kim was goofing off and voted no along with Scott, and then somebody's like, oh, you need a two-thirds vote to do it. Do you remember that?
I think I remember something like that. But they all did eventually vote to go to closed session. They were just kind of being silly about it. They were being silly about it. So, yes, you do need a two-thirds vote. So.
And that's two-thirds of present?
That is a good question. I know we had some questions on that in Planning Commission as to what two-thirds would constitute. I think it's two-thirds of...
That's with his present.
The present quorum.
If you have a quorum.
Mm-hmm. If you have a quorum here, then that's not good.
We can have a quorum and not have everyone here, and we can have a quorum and not get two-thirds votes unless everybody said yay.
Let me look into that, and I will get back to you on that. Okay. But for right now, I would have to say we have to be for those who are present, two-thirds of those who are present. Okay, public meetings versus public hearings. You can have a public meeting and not have any public hearings. So a public hearing has to be advertised prior to the meeting that it is going to be a public hearing, and that's a specific time for the public to voice their opinions on certain items that are on the agenda. Just because you have a public meeting does not mean that you have to accept public comment on any of the items. However, all of our public meetings do have that public comment section. So the public can comment during meetings, but if you have an item that does not have a public hearing on it and someone wants to speak, you do not necessarily have to let them speak during that item, but they can speak to it during the public comment section. Is that pretty clear?
Can you conceive of any time when the library wouldn't have a public hearing? Yeah, so if there was some big book challenge or something?
If there was a book challenge, maybe, yes. I would have to look in the code for the library and find out what items would qualify for a public hearing and what items would not. I don't think you've had many. I don't think I've ever posted an agenda with a public hearing for you.
No, I've never had a public hearing.
Okay.
I didn't even think that was a library thing.
Yeah. And so I'd have to look. Let me look at that too and see what items.
Or maybe we're approving in addition to the library or something. Yeah.
So, go ahead.
No, I just did find it. It says 2/3 of the members of the public body present at the open meeting vote to approve closing the meeting. So it is.
Right. Okay. So it's those who are present.
Yes.
Thank you for looking that up.
The next question I have for you is public comments. So we have been so kind as to only have awesome public comments.
Mm-hmm.
At times, library boards are prone to have people out of area come in. What is allowed, what is not allowed, what does Highland City have? Because, like, if we had 100 people show up here, it would be the end of our meeting, we wouldn't be able to do anything. Like, tell me about that. I'm hoping that never happens,
yeah.
But I want to be prepared if it does.
I'm hoping that never happens for you either. More than likely it won't. But I'll tell you how City Council handles that. And the mayor is very good. He will stand up and he will say, if you have a comment, if he can see there's a crowd out there, and if they're most likely here for the same item, he would say, if your comments are limited to 3 minutes, which we do, and we time them in City Council, so their comments are limited to 3 minutes, and then he says, very nicely, if you are saying the same, if your thoughts are the same as the other person that just stood up, maybe you don't need to stand up. He says it nicer than, you know, in a more professional way than that. But he kind of lets them know, hey, if someone's already said what you want to say, we have a lot of people here, let's be respectful of everyone's time. Is kind of
helpful. Can we close the comments like after 15 minutes and let's say there's 100 people there? Can I say, well, we're going to end the comments, you know, before we start, say we're going to receive comments for 15 minutes, or are we obligated to listen to them all? Because that's not what I see happens elsewhere. Like, they will close the comments when they want to.
Yeah. I will tell you what Highland City is typically very, very good about receiving comments. I have not been in a meeting yet where they have closed them off. But the mayor does make that statement at the beginning that says, please be respectful of our time. We have a big agenda. We have, look at our agenda. We'd like to be out of here by such and such a time.
Does it matter if they are residents or non-residents?
Nope. Anyone can come in and speak at that time. And we have had residents from Alpine come in and speak on that.
And again, it makes sense. There's times when, as neighboring communities,
yeah.
we care about the issues that impact each other.
Yeah.
I just feel like I'm going to get caught up in one of these meetings and I'm going to be not prepared.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to make sure I know for whoever's next in this spot. Can
well, kind of the other thing is a lot of times in public comments, don't want to ask questions and engage.
We don't have to answer.
And you don't have to.
No.
You're like, no, this isn't the time for comment. This isn't a Q&A.
Yeah.
And you can just sit back and smile, listen, and zero engagement.
Yes.
So.
Thank you for your comment. Yeah, it is not exactly like what Wes said. It's not a back and forth discussion time. It's not a question time. Simply they are there to voice their opinion or their concern, and then and basically it's to get it on public record.
Okay.
Great. Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Great questions. Agendas and noticing, this public body does an amazing job with that. Minutes, fantastic. Great job. So the agendas and the noticing I take care of, the minutes, Jessica, you do a great job with those, and I appreciate you giving those to me. You approve minutes like you're supposed to. This body does a great job with that, so thank you. Let's see. I really think that's all that I have. Do you have any other questions on open and public meetings? Carry on, you're doing a great job. Thank you. I will excuse myself.
Thank
I have
you,
an appointment. Oh, you're welcome. I hope it makes sense to everyone. And
it makes my life. I appreciate when you add motions in there and tell us what to say.
I think Donna does all that. I will give her that credit. I just have to assemble everything and post it. So she does a fabulous job with that. So
Donna.
Yeah, I won't take the credit for doing all that. She's just really amazing. So.
It also serves as like a reminder. Oh, God, board meeting. Okay.
Right.
I get it.
Yeah.
This is my calendar, but I doesn't mean
I know. Sometimes you don't look ahead on this.
Yeah. It really comes up really fast for everyone, I think, including myself. So,
thank you
very much.
Thank you.
Excuse myself. I have an appointment with my Zumba class.
All right. Now the next item on our agenda is minutes. We have a motion.
I motion.
And we
approve.
Okay. Do we have a second?
I second.
All in favor? What are we saying today?
Aye.
Aye.
Such a fun thing.
It's okay. It's our culture.
Okay. All right. So Donna, the time is now yours.
Okay. Session report. So our last meeting was in October. And I wanted to start with a highlight of what the board itself accomplished since then. In November, we went and visited Cedar Hills and Alpine City Councils and reported to the Highland City Council. It's the first time I know of that the board's ever gone to other city councils to do the annual report. I thought it was a really positive experience. And then the board was very supportive in our remodeling efforts in December. Hands out to Wesley. He helped me a lot when we did the painting. He helped me take down those DVD shelves so we could paint behind them. And then a lot of you came and helped us move books around and got through it, and it looks great. And I really appreciate all your help with our future projects. Some notable events.
Yes. Just ask a question. What's the general perception then to the new carpet, the new?
Oh, nothing but positive. Everybody just walks in and says, "Wow, it's so much brighter! It looks so much better." So
great job.
It's been just overwhelmingly positive.
The public works people changed the lights too.
Yeah, they changed the lights
that
too.
That made a big
difference.
Lobby and inside.
I hadn't thought about it before this week, but I think it's actually gonna. It had gotten really dark.
The walls are darker too.
We were missing so many lights. I think the new lights will help with seasonal depression for my staff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just having brighter lights.
I didn't realize the lights got replaced. Like, it looks so much just brighter, fresher, cleaner.
Yeah,
I didn't realize it was actually brighter.
Yeah, it was actually. They replaced all of the fluorescent lights with LED lights. And the idea is so that they don't have to replace them so often. So, but they're a brighter white color rather than the yellow color.
And that's in the lobby too. Out in the
foyer.
Yeah.
They did ask first because of it was just convenient to be able to drive the little car around while the shelves were down. Some notable events on November 7th. A scout for Zico Project set up a little free library at Beacon Hills, and so the library is now maintaining that like once a month and change out books and stuff.
I know Peter, and he's such a good kid.
He is a good boy.
He swims with my son, and he's so good. And I saw his dad at swim practice, and I'm like, hey, I saw a picture of Peter and Donna, and he's like, what? He had no idea.
Oh.
Pulls it up on Facebook, and he's like, he's famous!
yeah, so that was fun. I'm excited to have that little outreach. Just a little funny bit. No, we just have the one.
Because I know we have one on our park.
There's one run by a different park that's run by an individual.
Yeah.
So,
In Canterbury North.
Yeah, lots of members.
There's one at Canterbury North.
I have one on my street. Do you? So,
neat. Are these vibrators you're putting in it, or donated books?
I just donated books.
Because people are taking, it's like take one, leave one.
Yeah, so I got permission from the sense of the library to use library donated books to refresh it each month. So, yeah. We had a program in November in conjunction with the police department about bike safety, focusing on e-bikes and the laws surrounding e-bikes for children. And that was at the request of the, well, it was, we were talking about the issue in a meeting, and I said, oh, that sounds like a library program. So, I was very proud of that event. We helped the Arts Council with the Christmas event and gave out almost 300 crafts for that. And then in January, we had our winter reading kickoff on January 8th. And our theme this year is our 15th birthday. And we had a magician came, and we gave out balloons and cake. And then the Friends of the Library donated $1,000 for children's books as the birthday present.
Thank you.
The children's books could be up.
They could be up, yeah.
So we needed some more.
So coming up, we have the shelves coming. Hopefully we'll get those installed next week. They were missing pieces to the little dowels to hold the shelves in place.
Oh.
So I had to order
and
them.
And the end caps she ordered? Or
and the end caps were not quite right. The company wasn't top on service, but I actually like the shelves. I think they're a good color, and they're really sturdy. Assembling them made me realize they really are nice and sturdy, so they'll be good. And they have wheels, so we can move them around for programs if we need to. So that hopefully that'll be in place next week. We have a writing your first book activity on Saturday. We have our next AV editing class on February 10th. On the first one, we had 11 people can't come, so I thought that was a good turnout. I haven't had that many sign up for the next one yet, but I'm hopeful. And then just looking far ahead, we have a used book sale by the Friends on February 23rd and 24th.
Friday and a Saturday.
It's a Friday and Saturday in the Council Chambers.
If anybody wants to come help on Thursday,
we'll be setting up.
We usually have about 1,000, 2,000 books.
Yeah.
So.
No more than that, because we sell $1,000 and some of them are only 50 cents.
Yeah.
So. And we only sell a fraction of the ones that we have. There's probably 5,000 books there.
The library board meeting that night. The 22nd.
What's that?
The Thursday night before
the
book sale.
Yeah, Thursday night before we'll be setting up.
It'll be a library board meeting, is what we're saying.
Yes, that's true. So I won't be setting up. The Friends will be setting up that night. I forgot it's a library board meeting.
Yeah.
We're going to have a walk-through meeting. We'll be talking while we're setting up.
Your friends are going to have their meeting while they set up. And then far ahead, on March 24th, will be our fairy tale ball. This year, it's going to be Harry Potter theme. It won't actually be a ball. It'll be the Tri-Wizard Tournament is what it's going to be.
Yeah, sounds fun.
I've added in... I want to add in each month an impact story, and it's just something that happened that I thought actually made an impact in someone's life. And so I have a little story here about a gentleman that came in. He had received a notification. He's trying to set up a business, a lawn care business, and he got a notification that he needed to fill out a form online, and he was non-native English speaker and was struggling with it. And I just sat down with him for a half hour and helped him fill out his form online. He was so grateful. He was just so grateful. And it was just a little thing. It was a half hour of my time. But I think it made a big difference in his life. And that's why I put the statistics at the end. I want to change the emphasis of the library from statistics to impact. And how is the library impacting people's lives instead of just a bunch of numbers?
it's the best of the library.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, and sometimes the biggest impacts don't have a lot of numbers. But they really make a difference in someone's life. I feel like I've been director for 5 years. We've really transformed the library in 5 years. We had 180 people come to Story Times this week. Which I was looking back when we had our kickoff party, I put up some statistics from the first year the library was open. And they were getting, you know, 10 people come to Story Time. You know, and they had 3 Story Times and 10 people come each time. You know? Or, you know, they didn't have a children's room. They didn't. Anyway, the library really is a different place than it was 5 years ago when I came. And so I feel like I'm not having to justify myself with numbers as much now. I feel like we've got that with the council and with people. And so I want to focus on impact now. And so that's why I put the statistics at the end. But statistics are still important. That's how, if it's not measured, it didn't happen, right? The statistics were pretty normal, except for they were low in December because we were closed for 12 days for remodeling. So, but the one that's concerning to me is the total physical collection. If you notice, we're about 1,000 books lower today than we were a year ago, and that's because we're just not keeping up. Our books are wearing out, and we're just not keeping up. We're wearing out and becoming outdated. I don't want a library full of musty, dusty books that nobody wants, right? And so I'm about to tackle next year's fiscal year, budget, and I'm going to see if I can put more money in our book budget so that we won't be falling behind each other.
Is it a matter of just actual budget or manpower, womanpower?
There's both. It's both, because
sourcing the books takes a lot of work.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Because finding the books to buy.
How does Kim decide which book to buy? How does Kim decide which books to buy for the adult?
So she goes off. So our vendor that we buy a lot of our books from, Ingram, has lists of the top books being sold that month. So she just goes by popularity. You know, what are the most popular books in the country? She looks at Amazon top sellers. She
awards,
right? Yeah, the awards. She just barely went through all the newly announced Caldecott and Newbery awards to order those. But it takes time. It takes time, and then once they're ordered, it takes time to process them. So if I do up the budget, the book budget account, I'm going to have to up staff time as well to handle the more books. Because she does not have spare time. She works really hard. And so what I'm thinking of, and I'm not sure I'm going to do this or not, I think I'm going to have assigned someone else to order the children's books and have her just do the work.
And how often do you get requests from, specific requests from people?
We get about 20 a month.
A month, okay.
And we purchase almost all of them. We purchase almost all of our requests. We usually purchase about 90% of our requests.
I've had several occasions to raise an issue about a book that I thought was really great, and she's already got it.
Yeah, Kim's really good.
She's already had it on order, or it's already in the library.
I ordered The Empty Pot after a meeting, and I read Extreme Ownership.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, great.
And
that
came off.
You read it too?
No, I read his book that he said was his favorite book.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I bought The Empty Pot and read it to my kids. They loved it.
Did they like it?
It was beautiful.
So I have a question for you.
Yes.
So as understanding it's important to keep the library fresh, there's also the transition between digital and physical, right? Will you look at that as well?
So it's a good question, because right now we spend a third of our budget on digital. And our digital use goes up every single month. I don't know if there's been any month where the digital use went down.
And that doesn't take any processing time. I mean, that's just selection, right?
Yeah, so this it is way easier to spend digital money because the digital books are more expensive. Plus, I have a different lady, Callie, who selects the books that we buy each month, and she just looks through how many holds each book has, and she buys extra copies of as many of those top 20 as she can to come into her budget. We spend $1,000 a month, basically, on digital books. So, I mean, the question is, I think what we'll see going forward is spending less money on adult books and more of the money on children's books.
And what?
On children's books. Because people are still, they're not, our top 20 e-books are not children's books, they're all adult books. And so people are still checking out physical copies of children's books, then fewer people are checking out physical copies of adult books. So I've got to look at that. So does that mean that since two-thirds of our physical books that check out are children's books, we should be spending two-thirds of our money on children's books?
Well, that's just the thing that you have to put, if you're going to do a proportionate, you have to put digital in there too.
Right.
So it wouldn't be two-thirds of the circulation. Is two-thirds of the circulation including digital children's books?
No. Yeah. No, but if two-thirds of our circulation of physical books are children's books, do we use two-thirds of our physical book budget on children's books?
Children's book literature is age-specific, so their range is. So once that child learns to read at a higher level, they have a whole new library full of books, you know, that are new to them all the time.
That's true.
So it's like when you're an adult, you can buy the shoes you want because your feet are going to be the same size forever. So like, but I don't know. I have a bunch of kids, and they're all interested in different parts of the library. I mean.
Okay, those of you who have kids, can your kids find something to read when they come to the library?
For sure. Like having the Battle of the Books, my kids always do Battle of the Books. We love that shelf.
And our top one circulating, I did top tens again, and I didn't publish them like I did last year just because I was overwhelmed with the cover. But the number one book that had circulated, the number one title that had circulated the most was the Battle of the Books.
Yeah.
In fact, out of the top 20, about 15 of them.
Yeah.
They are top circulating.
It's a great list.
Graphic novels are high, and all children's books circulate basically more than all adult books.
And when you say children's, are you including middle grade and
middle
young adult?
Not young adult.
Okay.
Middle grade, not young
adult. I think the conversation is for curious, like, you know, it sounds like children's book is the right thing to grow and spend the money on, and maybe, you know, as adults transition to e-books, then leverage that. Yeah, I know I'm waiting. I'm on what 490 in place of the book, and I'm second on the physical one here. So, yeah.
Sometimes I'll be number 90 on the digital book, and I'll walk in, and the book will be sitting on the new.
Right.
But sometimes I still want the digital one.
Kim is super good at ordering the adult books. She's not as good as finding and ordering children's books. And I need to, and it's partially a resources thing that I need to train and resource her to help her learn how to find the children's books easier.
So remind me. A digital book has an expiration date.
So new digital books, ones that are new and popular, you can usually purchase, there's two ways you can purchase it. You can purchase it with a certain number of circulations, like 10 circulations or 20 circulations, and then you have to buy another copy. Or you can buy them on a time frame that this book will be available for 2 years and then it goes away. The only ones that you can buy and keep are like the classics, public domain type stuff.
That's an interesting model.
Oh, they're making so much.
Seems like a blockchain.
Because these digital books and the popular, like when Spare was out, the latest of that, and the so popular, they were $90 a book, $90 a copy.
And you're only able to loan that out 10 times or 20 times.
And then it goes away.
Wow.
So it's like
$5 a call.
Wow. So I wonder if people realize that. Like,
I feel guilty when I don't get to it or something.
Right.
3 weeks, so I'm like, I'm sorry.
Well, if they were due, that's not another. That doesn't count for another.
I don't
know. Again, I think a little bit of awareness there might be great
right.
for everyone, because if you think about the value, like every time you check out a book, it's $5 or $7 or whatever.
Right.
Wow, we just became super. You know, it's not the it's not the $30, you know, book that they buy once and leave it on the shelf for 10 years.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that is something to consider. That's when you break it down, it really is a new perspective. I had no idea. I mean, I should be more informed than most people in the public, so I'm pretty sure most people aren't aware that when they check something out, it's costing the library a few dollars.
Yeah.
And that would, like, next year as we do our presentation to the council, that's a really fun little thing to teach
that
them.
That would be
about.
An interesting thing to
yeah.
eat.
Yeah. Or this year, I guess.
Yeah,
sorry.
Sure.
This year. Anyway, that's the end of my report.
Great. I think the next thing we have, my fingerprint can't be recognized. Sorry, I gotta log in.
Well, I have just one more idea.
Sure.
Does Kim ever collaborate with the school librarians? Because they're doing the same thing at their library, selecting children's books. I mean,
no, she doesn't, and that's a great idea.
Because I know that Amy, when she was sourcing, it was like that's all she would do. Yeah.
These groups' ideas.
I know Miss Chadwick at Highlands. Amazing, she always has fresh
books. Well, and they also, don't they let you know about the Battle of Books beforehand?
We do. And the Battle of Books lists are national. You can just find them online. And so we always get those as soon as they're posted. Well, as soon as
some pretty early.
As soon as the last Battle of the Books cycle is over.
All right. So now we're going to move to the next item on the agenda, revision of circulation policy.
Okay. Okay, so with the grant, one of the things that we bought that was circulating is a camera in its case, and the value was $250 it took to purchase that, and we're trying to make it available to small business so that they can take pictures and videos and put them on the websites, that kind of idea. But my staff is a little concerned that someone will check out the camera, you know, get a library card, even if they spend $70 for a non-resident card, check out the
camera,
and walk away, that they just got, you know, a camera for $70. So, that costs $250. And so, we were wanting to look into having people require not to have a deposit, but to leave their credit card information with us when they check out the book, so that if it's return damaged or if it's not returned, we can charge their card. Now, the city has required a deposit for rented rooms for a long time, but they've actually charged their card and then refunded their card. They are currently investigating a change in the policy where they do the same thing, where they store the credit card number and only charge it if there's a charge. It was supposed to be on the agenda last week, but it got bumped because of all the alcohol stuff. And they would use a third-party service to store the information so that it would be secure. Now, the question is, there's two questions. Is that something we want to do? Do we want to take people's credit card numbers? They would have to do it at the desk. They'd have to walk over with them to the city desk to do it there. We wouldn't do it as librarians. The city would do it.
So basically, the city has an existing process to handle this, right?
Well, they're getting one. If this bill passes, or this bill,
this
resolution, okay. Whatever, law, whatever, code thing passes that allows them to store a credit card instead of taking a deposit, then they will
enact this policy, they'll get the system going. And then we could piggyback on that and use it for our library items. I don't think it's currently in place.
The issue with the charging them and then refunding it is that then we're paying like 3% in credit card fees or whatever the service fee is.
That's true.
On both ends. I mean, that really adds up.
Yeah, and I don't want to do that. If that was our only option, is actually charging and refunding, I'd say I'll just risk it.
The football team has people write a check for the cost of the equipment, and then when you return the equipment, they give you back your check.
And you have to own checks.
Yeah, it's true.
That's true.
So
taking our good faith.
Huh? The school, you're right.
Because
you know
who their children are.
Right.
I mean, there's two ways we can look at. We could look at, you know, we want to ensure that this service, you know, being able to check out a camera continues, and so we take these extra precautions. Or we could say we didn't pay for this, we got it through a grant, so it doesn't matter, and we can just check it out like a discovery kit, same thing, just hope that people bring it back.
Some of those discovery kits are
Some of the discovery kits have disappeared too. Yeah.
Can I ask a question? So
yes.
How do you know, like, let's say I checked out the camera and it came back and it was damaged, how do you determine how much I have to pay?
Or if it's damaged, like how, if the next person's like, hey, I tried to use this and it's all messed up, right?
Right.
You're checking it in between.
We do, with the discovery kits, I mean, this is all uncharted territory for us, but with the discovery check, we check them. Before we check them in, we go over them thoroughly, make sure all the pieces are there, and then if they're not, we don't check it in, and we contact the person. So I think a similar kind of thing would be in place with the camera. We would have to, when it got checked in, we would have to test it out, make sure it's working, and then check it in. And that way, it ensures that to the next person that it wasn't damaged when they checked it out, because we checked it when it got checked in last.
So I rent a fair amount of AV equipment. Specifically, like tomorrow I'm flying to Kansas City for the weekend to shoot a bunch of video. I'm not traveling with all my equipment. So there's a place there where I rent like a second, like a B camera and stuff. And they have a checklist of things, kind of like when you're renting a car. It's just basic things like, does this button work? Does this thing turn on? Does the lens work? Does, you know? And then it's like boom, 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 boom. And then I sign, it's like an indemnity kind of waiver that I sign, and they take like my driver's license info or something.
You're checking it.
When I'm checking it out, they're taking all this info, just one page. And then when I bring it back in, they take out that page, and there's another box next to it that all those same items still work, and then I'm good to go. And
that's a really good idea. That's a really good idea.
And it's even like, it's. I was talking to the guy last year, and I can't remember how we got on the topic, but he's like, oh, it's a preventative thing. Like, have you ever had to follow up on missing equipment and having told the police and like, okay, now I got to file a report. This guy, like, just knowing that, like, oh, this company took my license, they took the info down, I signed this thing, like, I'm not just going to walk out with this. So
they don't take a deposit or credit card number, they just take a picture of your license.
Well, you're paying for the rental.
Yeah, so I'm paying for the rental.
You're paying for the rental, yeah.
But there's like certain thresholds. So like if I need to get like an A camera, that's like an $8,000 camera or something, like I put a deposit down in addition to the rental fees, but I usually don't get that much equipment. So.
Okay. So one of my hesitancies on this is that I worry about our most vulnerable members of our population not having a credit card, and then not having access to this resource for starting a business. And I worry if that kind of defeats the purpose. Because if they don't have a credit card, then what
do I do? That's a good question. And I've been ambivalent about this before. On the one hand, I can see, you know, protecting the investment on the from the camera. On the other hand, I'm like, I hate to, well, one thing, I don't want to hassle with it, but, you know, I hate to, you know. So it's a good question.
So I think
that's why I'm bringing it in front of you guys. That's what my board is for.
So your most expensive things now that you rent are these kits.
The kits, yeah.
And how often do you lose one of those or not? One doesn't get brought back? What is the...
We usually have... So I have a shelf of kits that are missing pieces and stuff. There's usually 4 or 5 on at all times. But it's different because they have multiple pieces. Like it would be... like a matching game that has 40 cards and one of the cards didn't come back, or, you know, something like that.
It's also different because they're not as fragile as the equipment.
Yeah.
You're only renting the equipment out to adults. Is that
right?
Right.
Yeah, and one another thing is, well, maybe teens as well. Uh-huh. Like, we had a bunch of high school kids come in and ask to film in the library today. Mm-hmm. I mean, yesterday. And I thought, oh, yeah, that would be great. Audience, especially like for the green screen and stuff.
Well, they're not going to have credit cards.
Yeah.
Do you know what kind of camera it is, by any chance?
It is...
How are you going to know
it's a video camera? It's a video camera.
So it's a video camera.
It's a video camera. It's a Sony
XM9?
Yeah, something like that. I don't know.
And how do you know if people know how to use it? And they take
that, they won't check it out. That's why we're doing one of the reasons we're doing the classes to, you know, to help people. But the classes aren't teaching you how to use a camera. It's pretty easy camera to use. I bought the same kind that I bought for the library.
It's because the library has a video camera that we got with COVID money
back when we were doing virtual programs. And I bought the same kind so that I would know how to use it. But it's pretty easy to use this from standard. It's just a small kind of folder, but it's a good quality one. So
I think at the very least having some sort of quality check-in, like a checklist, right, where you're like, okay, here's the current condition of it. When you come back, we're going to go through the same process, right?
And have them turn it.
Whether or not there's money. I lean towards the money, but even if there's not money, I still think that the accountability piece is probably...
No, I think the idea of having a checklist, I'm going to definitely go through it with them.
So you go through it before and after with them, right? So
yes, before and after.
$250 isn't like that much. Like, if we want to just do it, checklist, sign, maybe check the state-issued ID, and then if it disappears, like, I'll replace it. Like, I'll...
So what if we were like I'm just Googling right now. So this is like from the Fort Worth, Texas Library. Total damage will be assessed if the material is no longer suitable for circulation. If you've been chewed, wet, whatever. And the missing partial damage will be assessed if the item can be easily repaired. And then you have to pay the fee. Like, so instead of being the
nobody would repair that.
Yeah,
nobody would repair that.
They would throw it away.
Right, they would throw it away. But the point is we're saying, look, you're responsible for this. We trust you.
It's
if
important.
You damage it, we would expect you to replace it.
Yeah. I mean, we already have that in the policy. Repair or replacement cost for damages to materials beyond normal wear and tear will be determined by the library. We already have that.
Yeah, that's part of it.
Right, but I like that because instead of us, you know, saying, oh, don't take our $250 camera, we're saying, we trust you, you're responsible.
Somewhat.
If you're not, then Donna and her staff will take appropriate actions.
It's probably easier to steal a phone than...
I deal with this a lot at the hotel. And what I have is I have everyone sign a contract that says all my rules, and then I have signs in that say things that I don't want them to take, and how much the replacement cost is if they're taken. So I have these nice robes, and so I'm like, if you wish to purchase the one, the cost is $100. So it's saying, if you take this, I'm going to charge your card $100. And
you get the card.
At least if you're doing lodging, you can charge a card up to 28 days from the date of lodging. I don't know if that's true in like a retail sale type of situation, or like, but or like a rental situation. But anyway, if I found damage later, that's within the law to charge a car up to 30 days. But I just think, like, those preventative measures, like, they're seeing a checklist, they have a sign, they know I have their card. Like, no one ever ruins anything. Like, occasionally there are accidents, but people are really responsible when they feel that responsibility. Like you're saying, I think this is, like, the consensus. Just people need to feel the responsibility of it, and they'll rise to the occasion.
I just don't want anyone to not utilize it that needs it because of...
And that's why I just say, like, let's not take a card, but let's make sure they understand, because it's a high-value item, that maybe there's something special during the checkout. You say, you can understand that this is this, and...
Here's another thing. What if somebody... What if I came, I'm not indigent, and I used it and ruined it, and then the person who really needs it wasn't able to use it. So there's a responsibility to those other people. The investment is for all of Highland.
Right.
Not just,
I'm saying that Donna would work with you to make a replacement.
Right.
And
I would.
Yeah.
I wouldn't ruin it in the first place.
But then that's the idea. So
but
let's hold people.
But protecting the investment is protecting it for people who don't have the means to own it or rent it out otherwise. So I taking a credit card is not protecting people from being able to use it.
But it is limiting who could use it.
It is, but if there is a situation, maybe there could be another form of,
you know,
ID, another form of
security.
Of security that we could use.
Mm-hmm.
They could bring cash, they could...
So I know it can't motion things, but it doesn't matter because they don't have the solution today. We could do it provisionally. We could pass the, or should we just wait and come back next time and see if the council has decided to move forward with this? Because we don't have the credit card solution today. So even if we were to say go.
Yeah, they only have the solution of charging and then refunding. Is that true?
Mm-hmm. That's what they're doing currently.
It seems like at the library, this higher law exists where, like, everything is just better and everyone, like, thinks better of each other.
Well, I think we do.
Yeah, that's true.
And I would rather, like, maintain
it's
that and get burned by
the coffee machine.
I really would rather that we lose that camera than the guy that came in starting his lawn business. What if he had needed
a camera?
And I swear, like, put it in the minutes, let's pass a motion, I'll replace it. If it walks away, if we can... You know, just make it as easy and...
I mean, we could try this, and then if we have a problem, then come revisit it.
I think all of us are on board about the checklist.
Yeah.
I think that's definitely...
A full contract. Like, I will replace this.
Right.
You have to sign and date it.
Right. Sign it, date it, put the replacement card clearly on it.
I think you have, like, the library card information.
That, too.
Like, we do.
So
yeah, you'll have that too.
We do. It's not like
we're verify
handing it out randomly.
That's true.
Right, like at least we can pretend to have a Highlander outline or whatever address.
I mean, I don't want to become Walmart where you can't buy anything there.
As long as you're locked up, I'm not buying it.
Waited like 15 minutes once for something, and they finally came over and I said, you know, I want you to know this is $6. I will never buy this from you again.
But that person does not care.
They do not care.
No, that's the problem.
But we will lose our story. Anyways, digression. All right.
What are we doing with the policy, though?
Do we need to change anything?
I think if we're not collecting a credit card, I don't know if we need to change anything.
The only other change you made was to say that they could use self-checkout, right?
Yeah, that first paragraph didn't apply to the way our library works anymore.
Yeah,
so I really just made some little changes, but...
So is there a motion is not to do anything? Do we need a motion to not do anything? Or
it is an action item, so I do think we have to take an action. Or we have to table it, so...
Do we want to table, or do we want to, like, just say not now?
What do you want us to do?
It sounds like that you're totally kind of
decided that we don't want to collect credit card numbers. So,
I move that we keep the physical item circulation policy as is.
We have a second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
Opposed?
Sorry, I vote.
Should we add that we're going to do a checklist or some other? Or
I think adding policy when we don't have to add policy.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I will just make that.
Are you okay with
Amy?
Yes. Okay. All right. So okay.
Who seconded it?
Sorry if we rushed that.
No, it's fine.
Oh, that's
fine. Be responsible, Michael.
All right.
I think we're going to begin.
So the next one, 6.2, background check, a policy required by law.
Okay. So in 2023, general session of the Utah State Congress, they passed a bill that requires for libraries to get background checks for employees and volunteers who have significant contact with minors. And they, as part of the bill, they require the libraries to give proof of policy in order to be eligible for collect grants or any kind of grants. So this is something we need to do. The city already has a policy requiring background checks for adults, and I included an excerpt of that, what that policy says, but they don't have anything that says anything about volunteers. So we just need to come up with that so that this
wouldn't the city be required to come up with the same law as well?
I don't think they have any volunteers that work with children.
Yeah, the arts program, the parade, the parks, like there's...
They do.
Yeah, they're all over the place.
Mm.
So I wonder if the idea here would be to wait for Highland City to adopt a policy and then follow suit on there so we don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Do you have grant applications coming up that we need to do? So the next grant round will be in April. I am not sure if I'm going to apply for anything. I can't think of anything to apply for. Unless someone has a good idea of what we want to use grant money for. I haven't thought of anything that would...
Are grants for building new libraries?
No capital improvement, sorry.
Carnegie's aren't added again.
Is this bill... But I said that last
for libraries.
This one specifically is for libraries. This one is specific to libraries. So,
the bill takes effect in July, right?
I don't know.
It was last
session. Did someone look at the?
It was
adopted last session.
So it's not the current session.
Let's see.
They may have given
July for your rank. July 1st, 2024.
So we have a little bit of time on this.
They gave a buffer.
So do we want to table it and see if this comes up?
I don't think it will.
Well, if this law was specific to libraries, then they won't.
Yeah,
and if it says that the library has to show their policy,
our
library has
to show a policy.
Since the school district started requiring mm-hmm. background checks, I bet a bunch of the adults who are volunteering have already have gone through the school district. Would that be able to?
Well, and that's part of the policy that we would need to define. Can we use somebody else's background check? Like,
right. Especially if it's a government entity, like.
And it's not required for anyone under 18. And some of our volunteers are that age. Like, I have...
And it's not required for someone moving tables. I mean, it's for people who are doing things with children. So if they're teaching...
Significant contact.
So if some kids come to the AV class with James Arrington, he would... need a background check.
No, unless Donna was there the whole time as the second who had the training, right?
Isn't that what you said last time, that you always have a staff member with people?
I don't think it has that disclaimer. I think any children It doesn't say if you're interacting with children by yourself without a staff there. They're saying if you're interacting with
children. But I think they're letting us define that.
I think a couple of kids coming to an AV class is not significant contact with minors.
Right. But I do have a volunteer that helps with story time.
It also says a volunteer position. So it says any paid or unpaid employment position, including a volunteer position, which I think means like
that's everybody.
It's not just like a rant,
like helping out
one-off. Yeah, but we still need a policy. We do.
Yeah, I think we can build a policy there, and I'd be happy to help with it.
This also defines significant contact with minors as determined by the public library's library board. So we get to decide what significant contact with minors is, which seems dumb.
So, like,
why would each individual library board get to decide if they're compliant?
And again, I would just say if you're alone with a
well-defined,
you know, you're not there with a staff member, then great.
Does it make sense to swap this into a different policy, or does it need to be a standalone policy?
Well, I was trying to think of what policy we could put it into, but I don't know of any that would really deals with it at all.
Can we have to? It just says that we have to review it every 3 years. So
yeah, it's like, you know how we have to submit our proof of library filtering. I every 3 years I have to submit a statement to the state that says that we have approved library filters on our public access computers in order to qualify for grant monies. It's the same thing. It'll be the exact same process and probably happen the same time. They'll probably put those two things together.
It's interesting because they have to apply for a qualifying position.
Right. Really? Well, yeah, and you have to, in our policy, we have to identify the position that this applies to. So this is not like a random person. This is like a person. Maybe you have volunteers that come in consistently, like the four, I guess it doesn't apply to them though, but you do have volunteers that have positions, right?
Well, you are all volunteers that have positions.
And then the library, but they don't fall under our jurisdiction.
They are volunteers that have positions, but they're not directly with children.
Right, but I mean, in the library, don't you have like volunteer slots, like people that are like consistent volunteers?
I don't have any official titles for specific volunteers.
The shelters?
We don't have volunteer shelter anymore.
Oh, you don't.
The only one that's consistent is story time helper. But we don't say we have this position for a story time helper.
Probably define as
necessary
because of the significant contact with minors.
Right.
Yeah, we want to make sure we're safe.
Yeah. It's an important thing.
And covered.
So we could probably fold this into the volunteer policy, right?
I think that we want to have a
standalone. Do we have a volunteer policy?
Because
yes, but this is for staff too.
Does staff not already have this requirement?
Right, but this requires us to have an overarching policy that deals with both staff.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So we could change the title of the volunteer one and kind of fold it into a
staff and volunteer policy.
Yeah.
Or
we can create a new one.
Safety policy.
Just call it the public library background check policy.
Or
and then move.
You could make it sound fancier by saying
no child unsafe.
Child protection policy or youth protection policy.
Think of the children.
Should we have like a how many days of that incident?
No background
unchecked. I'm surprised by things that more organizations don't have to do background checks. Like really it should just be status quo. Like that's just where we are today. So
okay. Yeah. I'd be willing to be on this ad hoc committee.
And I'm too.
Okay.
So do you two want to be our ad hoc committee?
Sure.
Does someone want to make a motion? Because I don't get to.
I'm going to create an ad hoc committee with Jessica and Kevin to create a policy about background checks for employees and volunteers.
We have a second?
A second.
All in favor? Yes.
Aye.
Yes.
Okay. We're burning through this.
Thank you. And just FYI, the cost of a background check is only about $72.
It does say that the state library board will reimburse the cost.
For
only if you're in the, are we not in the
qualifying library? Except for rural
libraries that...
If only we were Cedar Hill.
Yeah, we
They're almost 10,000.
I want them to get there.
They won't get there. They're going to stay right on that edge.
I'm going to start busing people into Cedar Hills. Going to get them about 10,000. I'm tired of that rural money they get.
And the Walmart money.
Do you want to table this, or do you want to talk about
Let me talk about it, because it's something that's come up repeatedly. So, we have had people approach us saying, I would like to do a program at your library. And, for instance, the lady that's doing the writing, how to write your first book, class on Saturday is someone who edits self-published books as her business.
Ooh. Is she your solicitor?
And so the question, so on the one side, I think this is a class a lot of people would be interested in hearing, you know, how to publish a first book. On the other side, we don't want to become the vehicle to advertise for business. And so my program coordinator has come to me several times saying, you know, what do we do about this? And even, I think even the person who did the ADHD student class, same thing. They offer a service where they help parents with ADHD children be successful, but they're willing to give the class for free.
The lettering lady did it too. She at the end, she's like, hey, I do this if you ever want to.
Yeah, so... We kind of need a policy in place so that when the people come to us saying, I'm willing to do this class at the library, we can say, fine, we'd love to have you come. Here's our policy about how much you can promote your own business as part of this presentation. We also had a company come and say, we would like to, they were new to, I think it was the Mathnasium. And said, we would like to sponsor a program at your library. What program would you like us to sponsor? So they were willing to give us money to do a program if we listed them as the sponsor of the program. And we just need to have a policy that deals with some of these questions so that when people offer these services, we can say, yeah, we can accept it on these terms. Instead of having to come answer everyone individually. Now, in the past, the only thing related to this is in the past, well, there's two things related. In the past, we've allowed authors to come and do author presentations and then sell copies of their books. So we have allowed that in the past. We required that they handle all their own transactions. And that's really expected in the library world. If you're giving an author talk, you should be allowed to sell your books on that. Also, the city every year has sponsors for the Highland Plain.
I'm looking that up right now.
And so there is precedent in the city for having sponsors of programs.
What's their policy on sponsors?
I couldn't find one.
Well, so our study room, which I said thought of that. It may not be used for direct solicitation of clients, fundraising, or events or activities which directly profit the business of a commercial organization or individual.
Mm-hmm.
I think that kind of
language,
the thing that we do for study rooms. That way, because you don't want MLMs to come in with a sales pitch.
But I want to because there's two things here. Because like if Mathnasium wants to do the sponsor of the children's activities for a year, and you know there's a trade-off where we get new books for
the author visits, gotta have a sale component on the author visits.
Like I understand there's the, but I think we like,
needs to be more nuanced.
Yeah, there needs to be a little, like, I don't want the library to become an MLM, come by Amway. I don't know.
Well, but is direct solicitation? Because it's one thing if it's, like, direct solicitation to me is more like the whole thing, like, you just got trapped in a timeshare pitch. But whereas it's different, where it's not a direct solicitation to, okay, I happen to do this.
Like, I think it's reasonable if we ask an expert or an author to come in that there's a percentage where they can speak and say, buy my book or, go to Math Museum, they sponsored this, thank you.
Don't these authors give you like a little bit of a rebate or something? No?
No. It's how we lure them to come and talk, because we want them to come talk at our library.
Yeah,
and they sell their book. They sell their books, so they're happy, right?
Like the park. Like, we're selling name rights to the park.
Well, it's like if you do an author book signing at like a independent bookstore, people who are there have to purchase the book from that bookstore for you to sign it. It's a general thing. They don't really enforce it when you have those awkward conversations with people, but a library wouldn't require that. People can bring their books of their own.
Well, I mean, when I worked at Provo, there were some authors that came to the event and required that they would only sign books that were purchased at the event. They wouldn't sign personal copies.
Mm-hmm.
So that happened at Provo. And some authors would want that, and some authors didn't care.
It's true. Some may be required to do that, too.
Yeah.
You have the kid author guy that lives here? Did he require
that in line?
Yeah, I got it.
No, he signed everything.
Yeah, he signed everything. People brought stacks of books. And the guy stayed there until like 9 or 10 o'clock.
I think that's the idea.
Awesome.
Is, like, there's got to be some like threshold. Like, we don't want people to take advantage of it, but we don't want.
And that's been the tricky thing for us to try to determine it. And we've been determining it on a event by event basis, but it would really be useful for us to have.
It gives me more power to say no.
Maybe you just make it take the form of a grant. Because there's plenty of private corporate sponsored grants that are available to libraries. And they're named, after whatever company is putting the money up.
I mean, and okay, so here's another example. When we had the painters come and volunteer to do the painting, we stuck a stereo sign in front of the building for a month.
Yeah, and it's like a form of naming rights. Like this program was paid for by the Mathnasium grant.
By the Amy Foundation.
And if you just position it that way, like, oh, well, what you're talking about is a grant, Mathnasium.
And if we ever do go to an edition, we're gonna offer naming rights.
Yeah.
So
I think that you just need to create that threshold. Like, it's a grant. Like, yeah, you can come do this if you'll donate whatever. But
and like the terms are like it's the name recognition is
maybe
the name of the
library.
Where would their name be? Just on printed materials that they give to.
So that depends on how much money they
give. More valuable.
Yeah.
What are the different packages? What's
the
diamond package?
The Friends of the Library recently received. Well, last summer Friends of the Library got, I think, $500 from Alpha Bank to buy book bags to use at the book sales, and we put the Alpha Bank logo on the book bags. This year they've promised $1,500 to buy the t-shirts for the people who march in the parade, and they'll have Alpha Bank on the back of the t-shirt along with Friends of the Library.
Are you looking for more sponsor? Like,
sure.
Do you want to make it like a 5K shirt that has Alpha Bank big and then.
Well,
so
yeah, absolutely.
When I worked at Provo the first couple of years, we gave out t-shirts to everyone who signed up for summer reading. And they're super popular. People love that because then the kids all had matching t-shirts all summer and had this summer reading logo on the front and a whole bunch of business logos.
They keep track of them, right?
And it was great advertising for the library because the kids would all run to the parade, so you walk along the parade route and, 10% of all the children have matching library shirts on. But Yeah, so what can we do and what can we get? There's no policy now to know what we can do and what we can't do.
I think we like grants. Like, we'll gladly have you sponsor a program.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's different than, because there's two things here, presenters and then grants.
Sponsors.
Yeah.
Okay, so we agree we need a policy.
Yes.
Okay.
Can we take this one?
She wants an ad hoc committee on it.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's what we're voting on today.
And so for the policy for the background checks, I think you guys can just come up with something without much input from me. But on this committee, I'd probably want to work with you more closely.
Is there an existing policy that exists elsewhere that we can just say, great job?
I know, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I mean, it's kind of similar to our existed posted and distributed materials. There's about that bulletin board out there. We have some language in there that's about
Salt Lake.
What did they say?
Presenter expectations / terms and conditions. I don't know if it's 4 pages long. So
wow.
Way
to go, Salt Lake. Wow.
Yeah, I got one from Davis County. But it's, this one is about people who can rent their multi-purpose rooms. But it has some good wording in it, too, as well. I thought there was a couple.
Well, scheduling programs is at the discretion of each branch.
I think we might find a good policy
that we can just
copy. Yeah. But I do want to leave the door open for sponsorship. For however we want to do that, because somebody wants to name the children's books room and give us lots of money for children's books, yay, let's do it.
Put that name above the entrance of the room.
I think one thing that's important is that if someone applies to be a presenter, it needs to be under your discretion. It needs to follow the goals of the library,
right.
It needs to contribute to our mission.
Right.
It's like husband and wife came and wanted to do a presentation. They're like, they're a lingerie store. Husband and wife?
No,
never mind.
I was thinking like a husband and wife were coming to do a presentation.
No. And what do they do?
I was waiting for the punchline.
No, I just like, maybe that wouldn't be contributing to our mission.
They're the number one checked out books.
So this is the wording in the Davis County one. It says, individuals and groups shall not use library meeting rooms to solicit business directly or indirectly, nor to encourage attendance at future meetings where solicitations will occur. Recruit or train staff members or others to work in or on behalf of a commercial enterprise, promote or advertise their business services or products in any way except as may occur incidentally, such as identifying their business or employment to establish credentials related to the topic of the meeting. So that's
they have a combined basically meeting room and presenter policy.
Yeah, that seems
that did in the different packet.
Yeah, this is in the packet.
It's just not the
report. I don't know why the report
is. It's saying hey, your time is a donation with no strings attached. And your expertise and everything that you're going to bring to the library and display. And but we have this other avenue, through the grant, private grant. But if you did want to put your name and whatever, then that's how you do it.
Yeah, you can sponsor a children's program, you can sponsor an activity kit, you can sponsor things,
And then the name of your company or whatever can be this program sponsored by or paid for, by a grant from husband and wife.
Programs must not be a teaser or advertisement for paid products.
Mm-hmm.
The program must not require purchasing a specific product or service for the information to be applicable.
And that's a good.
That's good.
That's a good wording. So it may be that we could just.
We'd have to change some things because. Never mind. I was thinking some of it didn't apply to us, but it does. The paid presenters.
And I think, as I wrote in the report, but you don't have the report, that I think that once we came up with the policy, we would have to run it by the city lawyer before we...
Well, and I think about when you have Science Day and you have UEU come up here, they're definitely propping up UEU. Like, they're recruiting, that's why they do it, it's outreach.
Yeah, I mean, they're promoting their program. Though they, I've sat in on all the ones they've come, and they've never said, you know, come join and be a chemistry major.
It's like incidental.
But
yeah.
It is incidental, though.
Right, and that's kind of the thing that we...
It's assumed.
Yeah.
I feel like Salt Lake's policy definitely allows for that without it being too open-ended. So it's a good policy. We just have to...
Like, if you're jumping through all these hoops to, like, not... mention that you work for a company or whatever, like, that's silly.
We're not going to have sensors in the room that if you say your company, you're fined $1.
It's a lot of words to say. This is not a place to pitch your timeshare.
Yeah.
It's just not, it's not it.
No.
All right.
Okay, so
we need an ad hoc committee.
We need a committee to tackle this because this one's a trickier one.
I can do it through. Yeah.
So we've got two.
I'm not going to take anything on.
I understand.
With my week next week, I don't know what that means for my future.
I want to mention we've had what do you call these guys that bring the animals? Petting zoo.
Yeah.
The guy comes with the petting zoo, all these things, the kids are just loving it and all that stuff. It's assumed that if anybody wants to have a petting zoo, they just have to walk up to the guy and say, hey, I have a function. They're not advertising. I mean, so that's cool, right? Because we've had a petting zoo out here before, and it was really successful. The kids love it.
Right? Background check and some indemnification and liability insurance or whatever.
Yeah, we'll go there.
Well, they must have to have that. The goal to kiss the kid.
If they're going to do a sales pitch or generate leads, we're going to be okay.
And leave it to Donna's discretion. Like, empower you and your staff to do what's right. Like, you've done wonderful things. Like, I don't have reasons to question what you're doing.
Do you feel pressured by outside presenters to accept their offer because they've been so generous to offer it, and it might not be something that you would want in your vision of the library?
I don't feel that much pressure. I think Kirsten feels a little more. She does, you know, she's the one who is mainly over the programs.
It would be nice to have a policy so that when you do have to say no, you can say...
Exactly.
It takes
the target.
It
moves the target.
Yeah. Totally.
I have a lot of influencers, like Instagram influencers, contacting me wanting to stay and then do a reel. And I just decided I would be the one to contact influencers and say, do you want to come feature my business? You know, I just decided I would say to everyone, like, I'm not accepting requests from influencers, you know, because it just swayed me, that I would choose someone just because they were coming for me, just because it was easier. But instead, I wanted to, like, seek out the ones I truly wanted, like, the brand I wanted to build, you know?
We don't know our resources well enough to take that approach. Like, the potty training class, someone approached us to do that. And then we thought, oh yeah, that's probably, you know, a class that would interest a lot of the moms that come to story time. But we didn't think, oh wow, I think our story time moms would really like a fine training class. Let's go see if we can find someone who would do that.
Right.
I mean, we do it that direction sometimes.
Right.
But there are people who come to us and offer things that we hadn't even thought of before, but we think, oh yeah, that would be popular. It's like 2 years ago when the Bitcoin person came and did a presentation about Bitcoin. That was really popular and interesting.
Yeah. Amy, like, you don't even know this point, like, how valuable me and my 200 followers are going to be if I come and bring that opportunity to you. You would never come seek out.
Aren't you in marketing?
You have 200 followers.
I have one follower, and it's Amy. So.
Listen, I've got like 13 million or something, and I never ask for anything for free. I don't even ask for paperwork.
Which makes you a gem.
It's a nightmare.
So I move to appoint Amy and Leslie, and did you say you want and Lynn to the presenter policy ad hoc committee?
Do we have a second?
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Yes. Okay. Thank you so much.
Great. All right, so then future agenda items or discussion items.
Okay,
oh,
so each year the library board training was different. Okay, so each year the library board is required to undergo library board training of some form. Last year we did online trainings, and I think
you watched them all, Rachel.
I watched so many. Yeah, you did.
I know, you threw a rabbit hole.
We have an opportunity this year. American Fork has scheduled their annual training, the American Fork Library, for February 21st.
And that's the board night, right? Or the week before?
It's Wednesday.
It's a Wednesday.
The day before.
The day before. So one option is we could just piggyback on their training and just go to their training, and that could take place at our meeting next month, or we could do it in addition to our meeting last month.
Do we like what's the value add to do it with AF? Is it easier for you? Is it
easier for the state? So it's covered by a state representative, and it just decreases the amount that you have to do, but we're not obligated. The other advantage is you could talk to library board members from a different library. So it would be a way for you to...
Would it be like a Sharks and Jets situation?
Yeah.
This is a mandated thing, right?
Yeah.
We do have to do some form of training. So I'm not totally committed to this, but I wanted to throw it out as an opportunity. If you would like, we could join American Fork Library with their training on the 21st. Either
do you know the topic
or in the middle of our February meeting.
Did they choose a topic?
They have a standard training for library board members that...
Oh, okay.
Is it the
same,
thing.
So if they came to us, they would be doing the same training.
Yeah.
I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, let's
come up. Might as well.
Yeah. Okay.
So we want to do it instead of our meeting? Do we need a meeting?
Future agenda items are just approving the policies that you guys draft, and then
the fiscal year budget.
None of those policies are super pressing, so we could postpone those a month.
I'm good on the 21st, I think.
And then that would allow us to help them set up for the book sale.
Yeah.
Ran his solo ensemble that day. Don't know what that means.
Oh, that's during
that
cool
would be during the day.
Yeah, 7 a.m.
That's probably a fake time.
It's 7 a.m.
Yeah,
added to the calendar.
No, it's real.
Really?
Yeah, they'll do that all day long. They'll go and do their auditions all
throughout
the day.
When my daughter did state solo ensemble, she came to every week to do it.
Yes.
I brought her here a couple different years.
Yeah.
So 21st work for most people?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have a possible conflict.
Yeah, me too.
But I think I'm okay.
It's
my nephew's performing, he's performing at the BYU Symphony, but I don't think that one's the one that's important. I think it's the sophomore recital that's the important one.
Cool.
What time is it?
So it's possible, actually I'm not sure about that. I'm guessing it would be the normal, 7 o'clock time. I'm guessing that if one or two people couldn't make it, then we could do an alternative watch videos on the Music Academy.
Yeah,
I'm trying to find it.
How long is this thing?
I'm good to not go to it because it's multiple people performing. That means I don't have to go, but if it's just him performing, I have to go. Okay.
Is it like an hour?
Probably about an hour. Well, he's the pianist. And so when he performs with the orchestra, he's a star. I gotta go to that.
Yeah, sure.
But this one's just like the silence.
So Wednesday, February 21st at the American Fork Library, maybe at 7.
Maybe at 7.
And that means we would have to let her know that we're not having a meeting.
Right. We would have to notify a quorum and let her know we're not having a meeting.
So do we need to do something to act on that, or we're fine to just, you're good with that?
I don't think we need to. It wasn't an action item. There's just a discussion.
All right.
And then I just wanted to pass by you the my proposed budget adjustments. There's nothing to vote on or anything right now for those won't be officially adopted in June, but I thought I would share them out at you. The one,
so much cheaper.
It was cheaper than I had budgeted. So, okay, so this is the one question about this that I wanted to ask if you wanted to pursue. Since that was so much cheaper, I thought about, instead of ratcheting that number down, seeing if we could use the leftover money that we didn't spend on carpet to do the door openers.
Oh,
yeah,
we like that idea.
Okay, so I will find out what I need to do to add that to the budget adjustments.
Awesome. I can't believe the carpet was only $26,000.
Yeah, it was only $26,000.
Great.
Is this a good time to buy carpet?
Everything's weird right now.
It was because we decided not to try to carpet under the shelves. That's what saved the money. To carpet around the shelves instead of $1,000 because of their donation from the friends. So they'll just give it as a regular donation and I'll reflect it by raising the budget. But really those are the main things. The other ones are just little tweaky things.
Thank you for being fiscally responsible.
Yeah.
That makes life super easy.
It's our job. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I just thought you would want to see those. Yeah.
All right, I believe that's all our discussion items. Do we have a motion to adjourn our meeting?
I move we adjourn.
I second.
Everyone second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And Rachel said yes.
And yes. And yes.